morning, folks, and welcome back. This is Mark Call, and I don't know if I'm alone or not at this point, but in any case, welcome to Drive Time Friday, where we hopefully have a little bit of a roundtable. We talk about what's going on around the world, and there's plenty on that score, but there may not be plenty of co-hosts. I was expecting everybody to be here. Jeff, did I see your picture pop up? Are you back online with us or not? I hear scruffling. Somebody's
you
there.
You could be looking for me. This is Tim.
Hey, there's Tim. Okay, good. I didn't see you pop up, but I'm happy not to be alone regardless. So Jeff was having some issues, and the first couple times I tried you, I didn't get you on either. So there we go. Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Skype did not ring or anything, so I just went fishing around, and I hit the button that said join call in progress. I went, sure, what the heck? It must be you.
Well, good. Thanks. Jeff is still messing around. Skype was being mean to him this morning, too. And, of course, we're used to that. It does that a lot. But here in the Mesa, we're used to the phones being nasty to us as well. So I guess it really doesn't matter. Any of those tech devices that seem to be pretty well bugged, NSA tapped and monitored and all that kind of jazz, you can't trust them, I guess. So let me ask this, Tim, while we're waiting. Well, go ahead. Comment if you want. I suspected something there.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, we sure gripe a lot about free services, don't we?
Well, I don't. The phone isn't free. I'm not sure what you're referring to as free services.
Well, Skype is free.
Ostensibly, that's true. I would be willing to suspect that it's not as free as you might think. But that's a whole other story.
I'm sure that at this very moment it's gathering all my personal data and looking around my house.
Well, it's at least doing something, and it's probably got other ways of making money. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so interested in it. If nothing else, I'm sure it's just being subsidized. But, hey, that's the cynic in me speaking. So, speaking of cynics, there's a lot of news today. Let's kick it off. And where do you want to go to begin with on the masses of things that are out there to talk about?
Well, we got some good news. We're not at war with Iran yet or North Korea yet. The Chinese are starting to take America seriously. They're not following the John Kerry admonition of just waiting things out, because all of a sudden the president who had a pair is actually using them and saying, okay, if you want to put tariffs on all of our goods that are coming into your country, and you want to hurt your consumers by taxing them like that, we can play the game. And guess what? Our consumers have a lot more options than your consumers.
Yeah. And we'll see. Of course, the problem with all of the fixes to problems that are longstanding, mm-hmm. and I say this as an engineer talking to an engineer, inevitably, even if it's the right thing to do, you get what you call transient effects. In other words, you know, things that change, and they can be dramatic, and they can be really painful, and they can even almost, in some cases, be fatal. You know, you can give somebody something that might save them, but if they're too weak to deal with it, it can kill the patient. So that may be the situation with the U.S. economy at this point.
Well, it's not going to kill the U.S. economy. That is not killable in the classic sense of the word, at least in the short term. And Bernie could do it, but
oh yeah, won't. Oh yeah. There's plenty of folks that are itching to try it.
The point I always try to make on the tariffs, and I taught economics for 15 years. I know that tariffs are a tax on the consumer in the tariff imposing country. I know they're a pain in the neck. I know they're expensive, and I know that they're counterproductive. On the other hand, that's only tariffs. We're dealing with three-dimensional chess here, and by taking one item at a time, you can oversimplify things to the point where, you know, you're losing the whole argument.
Oh, exactly.
I believe that Trump knows that our tariffs are expensive, that they're unpopular, and that they aren't doing, you know, what what the Democrats always used to say, which was protecting American jobs. They're not doing any of that. What they are doing is giving us some leverage over the Chinese, who basically don't give a hoot about anything else.
Exactly. Well, and one of the things that I think people lose track of, and, you know, those of us that have a penchant and interest in economics, particularly from an Austrian perspective, back to this idea of transience again, or recognize that when things have been screwed up for as long as they are, and so horribly, and you have government emphasis and manipulation and market tampering in so many areas, and it's not just U.S. governments and communists here, it's communists in China and other places, it's international money flows that essentially are fake to the core based on dishonest weights and measures. I mean, the whole system is such a stinking mess that it's very difficult even to begin the process of trying to unravel it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what medicine really tastes good? You don't want a good tasting medicine. You'll probably overdose on it.
Yeah.
So you have to watch out for this, and you have to play this game by the game's rules. And, you know, one of my high school students was probably taught me more about economics in 2 minutes than anybody else ever did. He said, listen, politics and economics are exactly opposite. Economics, of course, especially from the Austrian perspective, economics is the study of choice. And politics is the study of manipulation, deception, and coercion.
A removal of choice.
They are absolute opposites. So if you understand one, you understand the other, but they are at cross purposes. So living in a political world, which is what we get when we have big governments running around, we have to understand that everything someone does politically is probably going to be detrimental economically.
There's a lot of truth in that. And, you know, well, I guess that's probably enough said there, because it's such a big topic that we really can't even get our hands around it in the hour. I want to throw one other item out on the table here, Tim, that I think at least kind of addresses one of the transient effects that's really interesting. In the last several days, I've seen a number of stories. First one was from Michael Snyder at the Economic Collapse blog about the tremendous flooding that is literally, you know, of historic proportions all across the Midwest. And there are a number of follow-on effects to that. And he didn't mention it. I will up front. You have what's going on in California, where there has been a determined attempt by the communists there, Governor Moonbeam and now Governor Gavin, the communist, to essentially destroy the farming community up there. There was a huge set of fires in the fall. They've been destroying dams. They've been essentially taking away their ability to have water. And some of the most fertile farming areas in the U.S., both for vegetables in California and also all across the planting areas, are in a mell of a hess. And essentially what Michael Snyder's piece earlier this week said was that in terms of planting, and depending upon which state you look at, Illinois is a disaster. Iowa's probably the least disastrous, and it's way behind. Normally, farmers would have a tremendous percentage of their corn and soybeans and so forth in the ground by now, but it's too wet, and they're not. And in some cases, they're losing crop insurance, and in other cases, they're going to lose their farms, and they might not be able to get a crop in at all. And a story that I saw this morning had J.P. Morgan essentially saying, oh, it's a perfect storm, literally coming down on the farm community when you throw in the tariffs and the fact that China is not going to buy, about the only thing they do buy is agricultural products, and they're not going to buy those. So comments on all of that, because essentially it's a transience here that may end up wiping out a whole lot of farmers in the Midwest.
Well, it's quite easy to explain. Well, it's easy to explain. It's Trump's fault. The weather is Trump's fault because he's a climate denier, and the lack of markets is Trump's fault because he's ruining the markets because he's an anti-capitalist. But seriously, I'm in Indiana. It hasn't stopped raining here since 2018, I guess.
Okay.
And we have the same thing. Our cornfields, where the corn should be, you know, well sprouted and on its way, they're just lakes. They're planting around the lakes, but that's very expensive, of course. But the good news is, since we have these giant tariffs and since China has the giant tariffs, we don't need the crops anyway because we won't be feeding the Chinese. So it's all going to work out.
Okay, now I'm not sure if that was a sarcastic comment or not, but I will point one other thing out that I mentioned the other day. Most of the corn and soybeans all over the United States today, the vast majority, probably well over 95% now in both cases, way over 90 for years, is genetically modified, and I refer to it as Frankenfood. So honestly, a lot of us wouldn't want to eat it anyway. And, of course, what a lot of the corn gets end up being used for is, because it's not good for food, is burning it for ethanol, which is, of course, an economic disaster. Would never happen unless it was subsidized, because it uses as much energy approximately to grow and process as it produces when you burn the stuff. And, so it's interesting, again, because there are so many interlaced factors, things that would not have ever been done at all were it not for government subsidies and, various incentives and disincentives, that it's really hard to sort through what the messes are going to be that are put in place as it all begins to unravel.
One more good argument for smaller government.
I
can't make that argument enough or often enough. Smaller government can't help you that much, and it doesn't need to. And smaller government also can't hurt you that much. So get the power out of government. It becomes less expensive, less intrusive, and people are going to do what's in their best interest anyway, so you don't need government to tell them.
Exactly. All right, do we have Jeff online?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I thought I saw that you might have been there, so this is good. And I can hear you, too. That's the other thing. So how you doing? And I don't know how much of that you heard. We're talking about the disaster in the farm belt, among other things, and the bigger picture of Big Brother essentially messing with the economy, and perhaps at least a few things beginning to sort themselves out as Trump may be doing the right thing in a few areas. And so far, at least, I also saw stories yesterday, Tim, just to kind of wrap that up. He seems to have indicated that he's not real happy with Bolton and Pompeo pushing for war. I could say in Iran, or I could say just about anywhere, because on all fronts, there seems to be an attempt to reconnect with his promises and back off.
Well, yeah, okay. So what I did get was farmers. What I thought you were talking about was Monsanto getting stabbed for $2 billion.
No, not yet. Getting, you know, we can, though.
But California did that, believe it or not. So anyhow, I thought that was interesting. Monsanto has also had another pretty large multi-billion dollar hit in Europe recently, just the same thing. You know, so it's nice to see Monsanto get their just rewards for how they're treating us fodder. But the other thing is...
Whoa, I wish you'd pronounce that correctly, but before you move on from Monsatan, let me go to Tim. There were several other related stories. You're right, a couple billion dollar award. That's three out of three now that essentially have gone against the world's most arguably evil corporation, poisoning the masses rather than feeding them. And, of course, it's not lost on some of us that they're the ones that are involved in all the genetically modified stuff as well. But while that $2 billion award may not stand, there are literally thousands of other cases that are pending. And the story out of Natural News, which Monsanto has been blacklisting and coming against, was that France has decided to try to go after them criminally because the, you know, the IG Farben, a.k.a. Bayer, now Purchase, had an enemies list and a black ops team whose job it was, and I kid you not, and they spent over $100 million that's been documented evidently, to go around and punish journalists and politicians and regulators who dared to go against them and to point out that, you know, glyphosate is poison and some of the stuff that they've been doing isn't adequately tested. And we talked last week, if it was, if I remember right, about the lawsuits where Monsanto was actually going after farmers who didn't want their poison on their property. But because it blew in and contaminated their crops, they were having to pay and so forth. So all of that begins to come out. So it may be that we're seeing that particular thing unravel. Tim, you want to weigh in?
Well, yeah. I mean, and the Monsanto lawsuits against those whose fields they have been polluting are so ridiculous and so lopsided and so obviously crooked. That that kind of thing. Even I, cynic that I am, cannot believe that that pattern can continue. And I'm glad that Monsanto is finally taking a little bit of it in the shorts, like they should be.
Well, and I think with the jury verdicts, what we're seeing there is the fact that it's pretty well documented. We've known it for years that they have been they've been lying. They've been manipulating test data. They've been hiding the fact that glyphosate is a carcinogen and that there are some other issues associated with it. And when juries find that out, they tend to think, hey, this is criminally evil, and they need to be punished for it. And since you can't kill Monsanto and, or hang the chief executives because of their liability protection, all you can do is take away a few of the multiple billions of dollars that they've made in their purloined poisoning.
Well, the billions don't go to any useful purpose. They simply
exactly.
Monsanto.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't see the glory in that. I think that... I think personal liability of directors and personal liability, you know, needs to come into it. I also think loser pays, you know, and this is way broader, but I think the loser pays system would work a whole lot better as well.
And of course, what you've just described is the very reason why the big megabucks corporations or gigabucks like Monsanto are against all of those things, and the whole point of establishing the public-private partnership where they're immune from the crimes that they commit and they don't have personal liability. And no, it costs more to bring a lawsuit, and they know they can basically drag it out in court most of the time
and
get away with it.
And a public-private partnership by itself is unconstitutional. It's in restraint of trade, and it's a bad, bad, bad idea and a terrible set of precedents, and we cannot let this continue.
Okay, agreed. And unfortunately, you know, the old question is, again, once these conglomerations of power get into place, they're a heck of a lot harder to break up than they were to create in the first place, especially since, for the most part, some of us would argue that, you know, there are only a few shreds of the Constitution that still seem to matter.
Well, there are only a few that are still in force, let's put it that way.
Okay.
The entire Bill of Rights, other than maybe the Third Amendment, you know, is a goner. And those are the most important enumerated rights that we have. We just got a law passed in Indiana, not to hijack the show or anything, but we just got a law passed in Indiana that allows permit holders to carry in churches and schools, except in very specific cases. And
okay, so the good little slaves can keep and bear wherever Big Brother allows them to. That's nice. It's a step in the right direction, but it's the permit part that's obviously bugs this particular cynic.
I have always maintained that if you conceal carry, if you carry concealed and you do it right, it's truly concealed. And no one will ever know if you do it right. Now, the only way they'll know is if you use your weapon. If you use your weapon and you use it right, what are you doing? You're defending someone's life, either yours or someone else's. And I defy any jury to convict me for doing that.
Well, thankfully, you're not in California or the People's Republic of New York, where I suspect you'd find. Yeah.
But the point is, I have carried concealed for pretty close to 30 years. No one has ever known that I've done it. I carried when I taught school. University, college, and high school. I've done it. I've carried in church. I've carried to city council meetings. Nobody has ever known that. Even when I was married, my wife didn't even know I was doing it, which is probably a good thing. But the point is, I've never had to draw the weapon. And as long as I never have to draw the weapon, nobody's going to know whether I'm armed or not on any given day.
Yeah.
That's true. Can't deny me the right to self-protection.
Even though they try. I agree.
So a permit is superfluous.
Good. Well, my line for as long as I have been doing radio, Tim, and you've probably heard it, is that I'll get on my knees and beg for a permission slip from Big Brother to protect my family on the same day that I beg for the right to speak and to worship my God.
Well, get your knee pads ready. We're closing in on you.
Well, they're trying, no doubt about it. And that's the intent, and that's part of the reason why we do the show, is to let people know. It's the reason why I talk about come out of her and be separate and don't participate. And, you know, sometimes you take your ball and go home. Other times you scream bloody murder about it and just say, no, you can pass all the abominations you want, and I'm not going to participate, period.
Well, and speaking of Alabama,
Okay.
How is that for a smooth segue? Speaking of Alabama, that's one other piece of good news. You know, people all over the country are all upset that Alabama has made abortion illegal. But, you know, people all over the country don't live in Alabama. And if you live in Alabama and you want an abortion, nobody's going to keep you from crossing state lines to go get one. So they're the only people that are even affected by it are the people who are giving abortions, performing abortions in Alabama. So I don't see that it's a big deal. It's the beauty of federalism. You don't like it? Move to a different state.
Well, it's a heck of a concept. It worked really well while we had it, and it'll be. And I'm not being too cynical because I am seeing some other favorable trends. Story just as we were coming on today was that there are two states, Louisiana and Missouri, that are now in the race, and it looks like Missouri may win to be the second state to essentially say, you know, we've had it with federal co-option of something, which technically isn't even in, you know, there's no power given, delegated in the central government's document, in other words, the Constitution, for Big Brother to have anything to say about abortion, period, or education for that matter, or a whole bunch of other stuff.
That is the argument that will win. Because, you know, a woman's right to an abortion there's no such thing. It's whatever you can persuade your states to come up with. The federal government, though, if you make abortion laws pro or con federal, then you have no freedom. You can't move to another state to escape it. You have to leave the whole country. And the point of having a small federal government and powerful states is perfectly made by this Alabama case. You don't like it? Move.
And, you know, as we've both pointed out over time, the Congress has always had the power, like the ruby red slippers in The Wizard of Oz, to have overturned Roe versus Wade anytime it wanted to by using its constitutional authority to limit their jurisdiction. They haven't done it. So
they can limit, and what would collapse the entire industry is if they simply stop paying for abortions.
You got it.
This canard about life or health of the mother, rape and incest, all of that is nothing but window dressing. The rape and incest never even needs a police report. It doesn't require the cooperation of the victim. It doesn't require anything, and it doesn't show up in crime statistics. So everybody in the world, except, you know, really stupid people, know that everybody knows that the idea of rape and incest is simply a loophole that everybody drives through. Take away the funding, the industry will find its own level, and it'll be a lot smaller.
That's exactly true, and it's true in so many other cases. It's that we don't have a problem until Big Brother gets in there and subsidizes things that are essentially evil to begin with. You know, as we go to break, Tim, one last comment on that score. I've made this point for a long time, too. Always bugs me when I hear people saying, my body, my choice, my body, my choice, except when de Blasio wants to bend you over a table and stick you with a vaccine or take away your right to prevent the rape that you're so worried about anyway by saying you can't have a gun to protect your body, your choice. And it's the hypocrisy here that ought to at least begin to wake people up. Hey, we're almost...
Amen.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, I'm going to have to sign off, and I'll talk with you again in 167 and a half hours, but who's counting, right?
Okay, well, that's what I was going to ask you anyway. So we only had Tim for the first half hour. We're thankful to have had the input. Jeff, we'll spend more time with you next half hour, of course, because we're at the bottom of the hour break, and there's still a whole lot to talk about on a whole lot of subjects. Thanks, Tim. And that should take us to the bottom of the hour. So as soon as the music comes up, I'll say we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second half of Drive Time Friday. We host Mark Call, myself, Jeff Gilbert, and Tim Kern has left for the day, but he will be back with us next week. Anyhow, Mark, on a couple of things you guys were talking about the other side, I would love to have continued that discussion. I may have some different ideas than you guys have brought up and would have been interesting. But what I really wanted to talk about, and unfortunately Tim's not around so that I could get his input on it, is really it's along an extended logical progression of what you guys are talking about, and that is that there are things that you're going to be able to do and not do with your body that you should have a right to do because it's your body.
And if you actually owned it as opposed to being a slave. Yeah, I agree.
Well, yeah, but, you know, we have, for example, there's a new article out. It's in Ars Technica. And this is on a guy named Josiah Zahner, who basically has operated on himself and used CRISPR, genetic biohacking, to introduce changes into his body. And because he does not have the allowance to do that to his own body, he is being taken to court and is being charged with practicing medicine without a license. So it's another extreme of what you're talking about.
Well, there's a logical dilemma and an ethical and everything else kind of dilemma. That certainly is an interesting confluence of nasty stuff coming to a head, because ultimately, you know, you shouldn't have to have a license to do almost anything, and in a free market, we wouldn't have to worry about that. Yes,
could
I know.
Could you imagine 200 years ago if you had to have a license to practice medicine on yourself? We would have no medicine today, because every one of the pioneers of medicine practiced on themselves a lot. How do you think anesthesiology became big?
Oh, there's tons of examples. You're correct. But on the other hand, there is, at least with CRISPR technology, one potential, and I think the same thing to some extent is true with genetically modified Frankencrops. We did talk about that. Monsanto was producing these things, putting them into the environment, and they were contaminating farm fields. And then they were going out and suing, which just aggravates the problem, people for being contaminated, which is ironic. On the other hand, what CRISPR does allow, and a lot of folks don't understand this is CRISPR, all capitalized, and it's an ability to literally edit DNA. And the nasty thing about it is it's a little bit like home nuclear weapons kits, because essentially people can develop things that may have effects that are far, far worse than anything that could be done by a nuclear bomb, by introducing stuff that gets out. That's what level 4 and so forth biohazard labs are for, is to prevent that from going out. Arguably, there's a better case to be made for somebody not producing the next major pandemic in their basement and experimenting on themselves than just about anything else I can think of, even though I still have an ethical issue with prohibiting people from doing things to their own body if they're stupid enough. The trouble is, this doesn't stop there. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, and honestly, I agree with you. If somebody doing this in their basement, not realizing what secondary or tertiary effects will have, creating pandemic, creating any number of regional health risks to people beyond yourself. So obviously that's not cool. So doing that is not right. You should be doing it in a specific lab. So I definitely agree with the idea of controlling people's ability to experiment on genetics because of what it could do. You know, the whole black hole thing with CERN, you know, maybe that wasn't a real possibility, but somebody going and doing genetic markings without having enough understanding to know what they're doing in the long run to themselves, this guy just wanted to make himself stronger. So this guy, just for the sake of making himself stronger, could have done something at the genetic level to himself that was, who knows, could affect others around him and could be pandemic without ever knowing it.
Well, and
that's kind of stuff we have to be careful of.
Okay, and I guess as you were talking about it, I'm thinking, oh, what he's probably been watching is too many Spider-Man or Rocket Man or Iron Man or whatever the case may be, superhero movies. I can do that. It doesn't take a spider bite. I got CRISPR. But while you're thinking about...
this guy is a Stefan Winovich fan. You know, anyhow, listen...
well, before you move on, I want to go in one...
But go ahead. The idea is that we now have the ability to do gene editing at home. And this is something, I mean, when in humanity, we can bring people back from death. We can give people who have lost their sight or never had their sight, we can give them vision. We can walk on water now. Now we can actually go in and change our genetic structure. You know, we've traversed a hell of a lot of technological frontier just in the last 100 years, and right now in our very midst, we have the ability to do home genetic editing, create designer pets or designer children at our own pace. We're in a very dangerous place as a society.
Well, and the problem here is, and I would point out, especially when it comes to something as complicated as the human genome, and the fact that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, it's a lot easier to screw things up than it is to improve them, and that's probably the simple way to put it. But what I wanted to point out along the same lines, Jeff, since you mentioned that one, is that there is an assumption on the part of the statists and those who know that only big government can do certain things, that, well, that's why big government licenses, you know, fill in the blank, doctors, hairdressers, and taxi drivers in New York, all kinds of people that simply cannot be trusted to do anything without Big Brother's imprimatur. And yet, on the other hand, if you go to the Congo and ask the question, are there people being experimented on there? Is that a field lab for the CDC's patented Ebola virus? Because as a lot of folks don't know, the CDC literally does own the patents on Ebola. And, of course, they're experimenting with vaccines down there. And here's a story from, of all places, the Daily Mail. Headline says, "Doctors fighting Ebola in the Congo." Well, if that's true, there are a lot of people in the Congo that don't seem to think the doctors are fighting Ebola. Therein lies the rub. They're forced to wear disguises now to avoid being shot, because the death toll of the killer outbreak has now climbed to well over 1,100. Medics are ditching their scrubs, lying about their jobs. They no longer ride in medic vans, UN-labeled vans with all the kinds of indications that, hey, there's a doctor in here, because people are suspicious of what they've been doing. Tariq Rybel, Emergency Response Director for the International Rescue Committee, told the WAPO, "Our staff has to lie about being doctors in order to treat people." And basically, so many, and I think part of the problem is, and we're not getting honest reporting anyway, and who wants to go into these areas, that there are people that have had the vaccines and still die, and there's a lot of folks that are watching what's going on and saying, hey, the one way to guarantee you're going to die of Ebola is to go in and be treated. So I don't blame them for being sarcastic, cynical, and downright suspicious of what's going on. I don't know if you've seen that story or not, but it certainly is an interesting indicator of the times.
Well, listen, it has not gone unnoticed by some people that in the United States government actually infected, San Francisco with a virus as a test.
Oh, it's been done with military people for years. You know, a number of stories that we could spend 20 minutes just talking through the list of them.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that here we have the same problem happening again. Do we have the world governments using an area to build or somehow another manipulate a genetic structure of a virus and maybe eradicate it with, maybe doing it kind of backwards? But there's a lot of good that comes out of this kind of technology we have. One of those changes, and I'm not talking about the Ebola now, I'm wanting to change the subject to fake meat. You know, Burger King is going to be serving fake meat by the end of the year. I mean, in all their locations, over 7,000 locations, they're going to be serving fake meat. Well, I think it's a great thing. Because, hey,
okay. Have at it.
Eat Twinkies. Twinkies is fake food, fake flour. What's the difference with fake meat? It's just something that we've created out of chemicals. I think it'd be great. Why? Because, hey, I personally, I'm kind of sick and tired of how people treat animals. And especially in trying to manage the huge urban sprawl that we've built by very, very terrible long-range planners of businesses of cities and metropolitan areas. And we have to basically treat animals like garbage in order to supply food for them. Well, if we're going to be putting them in such tight quarters like we would animals, like the metropolitans, urbans are, then basically we have to treat with medicines and other things like that, and we have to be able to control all aspects of their health to manage sickness and outbreaks and pandemics within the herd. Because that's what urban population is herd.
Oh, okay, so here's the thing, Jeff. While I don't necessarily disagree with some of the arguments there, I'll say two things up front. A, I'm not going to go to Burger King, probably at all anyway, but certainly not to get a fake meat burger.
I want to try one.
Okay, good. Have at it. Now, that's the beauty of a free society. You can have one, and I can say, hell no, I don't want anything to do with vat-grown meat. But the problem that I have, and Tim's not here to probably say, he's on the same page. I look at this scumbag that just announced that he's running for president, probably one of the worst tyrants in the U.S., and the socialists and communists have got tons of them that want to control our lives. But I'm talking about de Blasio of New York City. This is the guy who doesn't think you have a right to defend yourself. Well, that's true of most New Yorkers. And he certainly doesn't think you have a right to say no to being strapped over a gurney and vaccinated against your will. They're fining all kinds of people up there. And it wouldn't surprise me at all that this guy will be mandating and stuffing fake meat burgers down people's throats. And I wouldn't put it past him to do it with Twinkies, too, Jeff, but they're politically incorrect, at least. People have awakened to that part of the issue, but not to the genetically modified Frankenfood. And, I think the real issue is, and that's where I'm concerned about the PETA folks and others, that they'll be mandating all kinds of things, whether people like it or not. I have no problem with people saying, if you want to eat something, go ahead. I know what Scripture says don't eat, so I'm not going to eat those things. But I don't try to force people to eat pig either. In China, they probably, let's just say you don't have much choice at all in China as to what you're going to eat or not eat, or if you get to eat at all, if you're so socialist credit score.
Yeah, so where would a vegetable protein product that happened to look and taste like a meat
Okay, so let me ask the question.
You knew it was a vegetable product.
You didn't mention that in the story. I have not followed if it's not a veggie, if it's a veggie burger, they've been around for a long time. I'm not a big fan of soy, so I'm not going to eat a soy burger. But on the other hand, because most soy is genetically modified Franken crap anyway. So, what there is a lot of talk about is vat-grown meat. And you're not talking about that. You're talking about simply a vegetable protein, something that's been processed. And it may or may not be genetically modified, too, and you don't know. It's probably going to be.
Right. I have a few less concerns about genetic modified foods than I did once upon a time, and primarily because, I live in an area that has pollution. And you know what? That pollution is probably as bad as anything I could possibly put in my body. So if I don't just live off of it, then I probably will be okay, and I'm not going to die.
Wait a second. Gotta ask you a question, because you just said something that surprised me. I mean, I've been to the area there. I know that the rainforests and a lot of Costa Rica, of course, you're north of that, but Monteverde and Arenal, that area is one of the wettest places on planet Earth. Lots of stuff. I would be surprised. You did surprise me what you just said about the pollution. I would be convinced, short of other information, that the average farm that's full of genetically modified crap and glyphosate in the Midwest is probably a lot more polluted than the area you're in Costa Rica. Are you saying differently?
Well, yeah. Glyphosates, Roundup, things like that are prevalent here. I mean, they're used, it's prolific, ubiquitous even. It's all over the place.
Okay, well, sorry to hear that.
So, the water that goes down into the lake, it's going to have runoff. It's also runoff gray water from washing machines and everything else from all around the lake. It's just been going on for generations and will continue to go on for generations. And on top of that, you've got, trucks that drive through and, they're belching out black smoke and stuff like that. It's, pollution's everywhere. So I live in pollution. I just try not to you know, dwell in it. The same thing with my food.
Okay. Well, let's change gears. But we do have to mention at least one or two other things before we head out today. You're not probably on top of some of this as much, but here in the United States, Attorney General Barr did appoint he doesn't call it a special counsel, but it is an investigator, John Durham, U.S. Attorney from Connecticut, to actually look into the manipulation, the real election rigging that happened when a bunch of criminals in the FBI, CIA, NSA, and so forth, the Comeys and Brennans and clappers of the world, along with Hitler, decided to rig the election. And they didn't win. They didn't get enough rigging in place. They got caught. And now Barr and Durham are looking into it, and the information just continues to come out that says, boy, they were nasty. The tweet that I think is really worth pointing out came from President Trump overnight, who said, conclusively, my campaign for president was spied on. Nothing like this has ever happened in American politics. And he used the T word twice in the same tweet. No, not tweet, treason. A really bad situation, he said. Treason means long jail sentences, and this was treason. So that is now being openly talked about. Now, the truth is, it was treason. This was probably the greatest act of political espionage, undermining, and there's no other way to put it, treason against the American people in U.S. history. And we're seeing it come out, and it may actually begin to hit the fan. There's more and more folks saying, hey, these people really need to be, wearing orange jumpsuits or swinging from tall towers at this point. This is a pretty nasty situation. We've known about it. But now at least there does seem to be pretty soon the New York Times is going to actually have to report on what's really happening.
Yeah, but listen, man, you know.
Oh, I'm not holding my breath. Don't get me wrong. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, it's been, you know, a number of years I've been out of the country again, and I was out of the country for a long time, you know, before that when I was in the service. So I have an interesting perspective from seeing from the outside how all this stuff transpires over a period of time. And, you know, this is so reminiscent of Obama and so reminiscent of Clinton and so reminiscent of we can go back so many generations.
Well, it's been going on a long time, but it's built to a head, unlike, you know, I mean, Tricky Dick Nixon is the one people point to. He was a piker compared to Clinton, and he was a piker compared to Obama.
I mean, no question. But what I'm saying is, I think this is one of the breads and circus ideas. This is one of those aspects of bread and circus that keeps people, focused. All the while, everything gets done in the background that they want to get done in the background, and you're not paying attention because it just seems like it's just a repetition. Every single presidency, for as long as I can remember, has gone through such incredible scrutiny and critique, you know, polarization, and that is, I think that's a big issue that people are overlooking.
Well, okay, here's where I will disagree, because when you say every single presidency has gone and has undergone I'm looking at Obama and thinking, are you kidding me? This guy arguably wasn't even a U.S. citizen.
No, the
birth certificate was a fraud.
Polarization. Polarize. I'm talking the opposition.
Okay, but not
very
the scrutiny.
Strong polarized opposition. To Obama, to Clinton, to Bush, to this, to that. For
and
as long as I can
been.
Remember, it has been absolute opposite. And the opposite wanted them to be, you know, executed, wanted them to be assassinated, wanted them to, whatever, fill in the blank.
Well, here's the difficulty, Jeff, and then we can move on, because I don't know that we're going to come to a complete meeting of the minds on this score. However, there is a difference between pointing out that the bifurcation in the Congress, right, the R party versus the D party, the reds and the blues and all that kind of jazz, is nothing but a distraction. I talk about two wings of the same bird of prey. On the other hand, that doesn't mean that there isn't a different bifurcation that isn't getting reported, which is deep state versus, well, fill in the blank, the American people, the Constitution, the rule of law. And that's the problem. It's completely at right angles. While people are focused on the R versus D divide, they're missing the fact that both parties, the Bush, the Clintons, and the Obamas, were all part of the same monoparty, all moving towards a communist state, all looking to undermine the rule of law, destroy the right of the people to keep and bear arms, to have privacy, to we don't need no stinking warrants. And they were all doing similar things. They just kept escalating it. So, I'm with you on one part of that, and
and totally on the other side on the other, if that makes sense.
No, I get you. I mean, because they're wrong, right? Because the other side is wrong.
Well, what's the other side is the question.
That everybody seems to be going through. Listen, man, we're going to have – this is where it's going. You're worrying – and you have mentioned that the future socialist or communist influence, you know, I think that that's an archaic form. I think what we're dealing with is quite literally a change in society and the values of society being driven down our throat. In Canada, you now can go to jail, and if there's a guy in Canada, $50,000 fine.
Oh, yeah.
Because he would not address his own child in the correct gender form.
And they're taking the children away now.
So that's what's being forced upon people in the United States now. So that's what your governments have become. I don't think the idea of communism, socialism, reds, blues, whites, you know, I think that's just archaic. Today we're dealing with people who have a different moral standard and a different vision of society that we're not going to appreciate.
Well, to that extent, I do agree. You know,
if you don't like it, move, right? That's the that's states' rights, right?
Well, when it comes to the point of there won't be a place to move to is the issue. And all the isms, ultimately, I will contend there's not much difference between socialism and communism and fascism because they've all merged into one great big brother public-private partnership conglomeration. Now, to get to your point about old-fashioned, you know, technocracy actually dates back to the 30s, if not before, the scientific dictatorship. And truthfully, it's not communism so much as that. Which is where we're headed, which is why you have the AI that they would like to run everything. I've got one last story. I'll throw this out. Facebook, has gagged Italian populace. There's an election coming up in the EU in 2 weeks, and they have said that essentially all of the populist parties, the Five Star Movement, Matteo Salvini, La Lega, and the others that aren't on board with the European techno-fascist coming dictatorship are to be gagged. They were spreading fake news, hate speech, divisive content. We've heard it all before. And so Aktung, Facebook says, we are public-private partners with the other side, whatever that means, and you can't speak anymore. Did I lose you? You're muted. Okay, well, I'll tell you what I got to do is.
I was in the.
Yeah.
I was in the green room.
You were in the really green room and dark besides. Go ahead, quickly. We're almost out of time.
I'm sorry, but I said everything I wanted to say. I said it so well, I can't say it again. I was just going to say, have a great Sabbath. If the burgers come out, go try one. You know.
Okay, well, look and see what's in it and make sure it's not genetically modified, is what I would say. Yeah. But. We're almost there. Let's see here. What do we got as we move out to the break? This will follow with some interest anyway. It's happening. Trump has said he is going to invoke the Insurrection Act to remove illegal aliens from the United States. Well, that's a tall order. We'll see if since they're coming in at 100,000 a month, they can even get rid of them that fast. What they are doing, though, is they're moving them out of the border states and now jetting them around the country. Obama was giving them free bus rides, and now the anti-Trump, I don't think he's really running what's going on at the border, but whatever you call the people that are welcoming the invaders in, are not only giving them welfare, they're giving them plane rides, too, to other places. So the battle is engaged, I guess. Shabbat shalom. Thanks, Jeff.